Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
All right, welcome to Birdland Tonight, in this case, Birdland Afternoon. I am Josh Soroka from Section 336. With me today is Andrew Stetka from Utah Street Report. Andrew, how you doing?
I'm good, Josh. The team's 2-0, and, you know, even though it was a little hairy there at the end, you know, two good wins up in Boston so far.
And, yeah, hairy there at the end, but I guess we have a closer. After all the talk of teams that rebuild don't have closers, that Hyde doesn't believe in the closer position. He seems to believe in the closer position, at least with who he trusts.
Yeah, it might be the case, and it's interesting too, because we even heard some pregame quotes from Hyde saying that he didn't want to use Cesar Valdez if he didn't have to. And, You know, did he have to? I don't know. I think that's a question that's open for debate, but he did anyway. And things, as I mentioned, did get a little dicey there in the ninth inning, but he got the job done.
Yeah, and I want to talk about that in a moment, because he definitely did not have to use Cesar, but he chose to. But I want to set up Birdland Tonight. Everyone should be going over to birdlandtonight.com, going on to Birdland Sports on Facebook, Twitter, Twitch, subscribe to the Birdland Tonight podcast. I don't know what Masson's doing now as far as the post-game show. What I do know is that the game that I see on the at-bat and at the end, Scott Garceau and Jim Palmer are doing an interview with big, heavy winter coats on. They're ready to get out of there and go home. And I don't think there's anything that represents the Masson post-game show better than that picture today of them with their coats on.
Well, I don't have a coat on. I'm, you know, in my office and ready to, you know, chat with you about this one. We're not going anywhere. We're going to sit here and talk about this game for a little while, because frankly, it was an entertaining game. I mean, it was, you know, like yesterday's game, a win on opening day. This was entertaining. This was a well-played ball game by the Orioles.
Oh, and you know, we haven't mentioned yet, but the Orioles are in first place. And I know it's only two games, but I'm going to say that as long as I can.
Yeah, because there won't be many more days you likely can say it. But for now, you're right. You can say it.
But a full team play, and everyone seemed to participate. I definitely want to talk a little bit about Ruiz today, because him at second base, I think, was a surprise to all of us this season, and something we didn't even really talk about as an option during spring training. But let's continue the conversation with Valdez and going back to him at the end, even in a scary situation, because Hyde did not have to do it, because he still had Paul Fry, Cole Saucer, Wells, Scholler, and LeBlanc, who have not made any appearances this year. And normally, we're used to the Buck Showalter method of your first 3-4 games, you rotate through and get all your pitchers in, no matter what the situation.
Yeah, I mean, you bring up a good point, and I definitely think this rules out Cesar Valdez from any kind of an appearance on Sunday, maybe even on Monday. We'll see. But like you said, I even thought that the way that Dylan Tate came in the eighth inning and pitched, you know, only threw 11 pitches, 9 of them strikes, breezed through that inning, got a strikeout. I mean, you blinked, and the bottom of the eighth was gone. I even thought that Dylan Tate might have stayed on just because he threw so few pitches. But, you know, then we saw Valdez warming up, and it did turn out to be him after all. But, you know, I think that's part of what Brandon Hyde is going to obviously have to balance this early in the season with, you know, that we're going, everybody's got to remember we're going from a 60 game season to 162 games. So pitching staffs are going to be stretched, you know, throughout the season. And at this point, you know, I think Brendan Hyde has a lot of different options in that bullpen he can go to. It, you know, I'm not going to question it. It worked out going to Valdez today. But you are going to have to start to spread the love, if you will, even if it is in that closer's role, and give some other guys some opportunities late in games in those high leverage situations. But so far he's 2-0 doing it, and you can't really question the methods.
You can't really question too much about the entire pitching staff in the first two games. Like you said, Dylan Tate was perfect in that eighth inning.
Yeah, he was brilliant.
No one would have asked the question if he came back in the ninth because he was so good. And before that, Plutko came in once Matt Harvey started to struggle a little bit and went 2 1/3.
Yeah,
only gave up one hit. He got 2 strikeouts for a guy that, I don't know, did we even get to see him in the spring at all?
Well, no, he was acquired really late in spring,
right,
just in this last week. So, you know, nobody really knows much in Baltimore about Adam Plutko, but you're right. He came in, and for me, you know, nobody was a real standout offensive performer in this game. I mean, we had a couple of guys with 2 hits. You know, Michael Franco did have the 2 RBIs on his bop in the fourth, but there was no real standout performer. For me, it was kind of Adam Plutko. I mean, he came in relief of Harvey in that, what was it, the fifth inning, and, you know, really shut the door and then pitched another 2 innings and kind of bridged the gap from starter to the latter half of the bullpen for the Orioles in this one. And that was really important, and a really important outing in his Oriole debut.
Yeah, I was annoyed that Plawecki scored right before Plutko came in, because I really wanted to hear Scott Garceau talk about both those guys in the same sentence.
It would have been a challenge for me as well. So I don't blame you for wanting that. Yeah.
But let's stick with the pitching, because before all that, we got Matt Harvey.
Yeah.
And this spring, I think 3 innings was the deepest he went in spring. And we got him 4 2/3 innings, 2 runs, 6 hits. I mean, it's Matt Harvey. He's 32 years old. He doesn't need to be playing baseball anymore.
This is exactly what you want, though, out of a Matt Harvey start for the Orioles.
Oh, no. I mean that in a huge compliment when I say he doesn't need to be playing baseball anymore. I mean, he has changed his game completely, where he's not the fast throw. And though he's hitting 94, 95, he's changed more into a strategy analytics type pitcher. And suddenly there's this veteran presence guy that if he retired, no one would question him. He had a great career.
Yeah.
But he's determined to come back, and those numbers are as good as I was is probably better than most people expected from Matt Harvey, especially for his first out in a cold Boston. To have a guy like that, if he can put up numbers like that all season, that's a great guy to have on your team.
Oh, no question. And even though he is this quote unquote second starter, I mean, you want fourth, fifth starter type of production out of him, and you're completely satisfied.
Right.
And that's what he gave. You know, starting out in that first inning, you mentioned he was hitting 94, 95 on the radar gun. How accurate that is, I'm not sure, but we'll go with it for now, for the time being, until we hear otherwise, which is nice. But he was also, you know, he was a little erratic. His command was a little off in those first handful of innings, but he navigated his way through a Red Sox lineup that, you know, despite what John Means did to them yesterday, is supposed to be somewhat formidable. Now, through these first two games, we haven't really seen that. We've seen, you know, 2 total runs out of them in 2 games. But all things considered, like you said, I think Matt Harvey, this is the kind of outing you want. The thing that I was most impressed with, frankly, with Matt Harvey was that while his command was off, especially in those first handful of innings, He wasn't getting behind guys and allowing walks, because that's what really is the killer. He walked one batter, and that came I believe in his final inning of work.
In the fifth inning.
Yeah. That was in the fourth inning. You know, his final inning. So like that's the kind of thing that you really appreciate, is that if a guy is at least struggling with his command, he's not going to go out there and put guys on base constantly. He gave up, you know, sprinkled his six hits he allowed throughout the outing and the one walk, and was able to strike out a handful of guys too.
Yeah, not to mention also some bad luck for him with
sure.
Austin Hayes losing the ball in the sun that looked
no
like
question.
An easy out. Severino with the strikeout throw, double play. That was just a horrible throw.
Right.
With the final run where the ball went off of, came back and went, bounced off of him in like that
right.
one spot on the field you don't want the ball to go to. Just some no bad luck. So, 3.86 ERA after his first game. Sounds good.
You take it and you throw him out there again on Thursday, you know, for the home opener. That's at least the projection at this point. And you know, you hope for the best. You see if he can't go out in front of the home fans on Thursday and put in something similar, maybe get through five or six. The one thing I did kind of question in that fifth inning where he was pitching, and trying to get to the fifth. I was wondering if we were getting a little bit of the old Buck Showalter mantra of you want to get a guy through the fifth to give him a chance to win. He ended up not making it through the fifth, but I was hoping that that was not the case because, of course, what does it matter that he gets the win? He did bring in Plutko in that inning to get the final out, which ended up being the right call, but that was after the run had scored in that inning. So, you know, to each their own, but you know, it's at least nice to get him. You know, get like have that bridge with Plutko to the back half of the bullpen, as I mentioned earlier.
Yeah, and I think it's telling that, like, when I rattled off all those names that we haven't seen come out of the bullpen yet, is because we had two games with perfectly fine starts, where it would have been nice to see Harvey get through the fifth, but he got 4 2/3. I mean,
yeah, and no one's trying to compare it to yesterday with John Means either, which was incredible. But this is exactly like we said, the Matt Harvey of it all. This is what you want.
Yeah, no. Means had such a good game that I was worried everyone was going to be comparing whatever Matt Harvey did to John Means. And
yeah.
John Means had one of the best starts of his career. So
yeah, yeah, it was incredible.
Yeah. And I guess also I hate that win stat. You mentioned how you got to get through five because Plutko gets the win. For his two innings or whatever that he was in for.
Yeah, so, 2 1/3. Although, like I said, Plutko did a really good job of shutting things down and bridging the gap. And he deserves, you know, all the flowers for that.
Right. I like Charlie's pointing out in the comment section that we are on pace for 162-0.
That is true. I'll technically, you know, if you do the celebrate. Yeah, if you do the math, that is accurate.
Yeah.
You can't argue with math, so I've heard.
Right, right. It's what is it? It's the science. The science says we're 162-0.
That's true. Projected 162.
Yeah, what's going on over there? Brady's also wondering if Salser or Tate will come in the ninth tomorrow in a save situation if we get in that situation again.
You've certainly got to get there first. But I mean, like I said, I liked what I saw out of Dylan Tate today, in the eighth inning. And, you know, like you said, Sulcer's an option. Have we seen Tyler Wells yet? No. He's the other one you mentioned. No. Max
Wells,
Roller,
Fry.
The two Rule 5 guys. So there are options in that bullpen. I mean, look, the Orioles didn't start with this large of a pitching staff to start the season in order to run the same guy out there over and over again. They're going to spread the wealth. They're going to get a lot of use out of these guys.
Right. But like you said, Tate pitched 11 pitches today. I'm sure he's still available tomorrow.
So you would hope so.
You would see that. All right, let's talk a little bit about this this offensive squad team.
Yeah,
and I guess and defense, but some of the position players. And I mentioned earlier I wanted to talk about Rio Ruiz because no one saw this coming as him being a second baseman. He made some outstanding plays in the field yesterday. He got on base today with a walk, scored. He's making an impact for a guy that I didn't think we had a spot for on this team.
You know, it's interesting. When this team signed Michael Franco to play third base, it did immediately make me think what's going to happen to Rio Ruiz. You know, last year, I think Rio Ruiz had, I wouldn't call it a great season, but he was extremely formidable at third base. He had the power numbers, didn't quite have the batting average or the on-base percentage you would want, but he was doing an adequate job playing third base. And the other part of that we've seen late in these first two games too, that, you know, Brandon Hyde has made a substitution and brought Urias in to play second and moved Ruiz over to third in place of Michael Franco. You know, with Ruiz, I never thought that he was just going to be shunned off the island here. I just thought that he would be more of a backup. But the fact that, and Brandon Hyde kind of commented on this early last week, talking about, you know, at the tail end of spring training, he was trying to get Rio Ruiz some innings at second base. as, you know, kind of a backup option, an emergency option, if you will. And I think a lot of people expected that they would see Pat Valaika come in and play second base to start the season.
Sure.
But the fact that Hyatt has had the confidence to throw him in at second base and keep his bat in there, which I don't know that there's a ton of argument, but maybe there's a little. But I think Rio Ruiz's bat deserves to be, you know, toward the bottom of this order ahead of guys like Pat Valaika. And I don't think that's a bad option. As long as Rio Ruiz is going out and performing at an adequate or slightly below adequate level at second base, you know, it's not the most challenging position on the diamond to play. I think he can, you know, perhaps be this team's second baseman going forward. A lot to be said. This is obviously a very small sample size of two games that we've seen from him. But he's an athletic guy and I think he can manage there. We'll see in the performance. And obviously, like you said, we'll have to see with the bat as well. He was able to get on base today, came around to score at one point. You know, he's going to have to perform with the bat in order to keep his spot in the field as well. But as long as he's not embarrassing himself over there at second base, I think he deserves every opportunity to continue to stay in the lineup there.
Yeah, over on Facebook, AJ's mentioning that he'd like to see Mountcastle get some time at second base. I think
so. We don't want Mountcastle to have to play seven different positions. He's not Marwin Gonzalez, who can actually do that.
And we've already put Mountcastle at all these different positions in the minors. He can't handle any of them. We're fine with him being the DH.
I think when it comes to Mountcastle, I think it's completely fine to play him at DH, play him at first base occasionally, and then when you need to, you can throw him out in the outfield and in left field. You know, if God forbid there are some injuries or something that are going on. But I don't think you want to be moving him around and trying to get him. You want him to focus on hitting the ball hard
I think we'll see Mountcastle in the outfield tomorrow because I think it's a Sunday. It's 2 days, two games. They're going to want to give guys a break, kind of work in slowly into this season. So I'd expect him in the outfield. I will never expect him at second base. Ruiz made in the outfield yesterday, Mountcastle cannot make those.
And I think there are other options ahead of, you know, throwing a guy like Mountcastle over there, you know, if need be. I mean, you could easily see Freddy Galvis or Michael Franco take that spot before one of the two of them.
Right. No, I think tomorrow we see Valaika at second, maybe.
Good chance. Yeah. And look, this is the other thing you got to look at, too. Not only is it a good chance for a Sunday lineup tomorrow because it's a Sunday, but you've won the first two games of this series. You've already banked yourself a series victory. Not that it wouldn't be nice to pull off the sweep, but the way that baseball teams think is if you've got the two in your under your belt, you know, go out. You're playing with house money, essentially, in the third game.
Exactly. And you're going to see the change behind the plate too, because Severino, he's been playing well, but he gets gotten banged up in both games. So
Francisco
will be back there tomorrow.
Taking quite a few off the mask in the last 2 days.
Let's see. Brady's asking, will Diaz make his debut this season? Who knows? I mean, he didn't look that great in the spring. So it all depends on how much of the minor league season they have. And he's in a crowded position, the outfield. There's lots of guys out there.
Yeah, there's not many opportunities, especially when you consider the three or four outfielders that are, you know, fully capable of playing at the big league level, unless one of them gets hurt, which, as we know, is always a possibility with some of those guys, or one of them really, really struggles. Yusniel Diaz is going to have to prove it. And it's disappointing to think about that and say that because he was supposed to be the centerpiece of the Manny Machado deal. The first thing that really kicked this whole rebuild off under the old regime and Dan Duquette. But still, that was supposed to be the launch pad for this thing to get better. And it's been, you know, a little disappointing that he hasn't been that guy, but you know, you just have to give it time at this point and not really, I also think not really rely on it happening and focus on who's here and who's actually performing in those spots.
You're right. AJ says I'm wrong that Mountcastle never played second in the minors. I'll have to double check that because my memory served that he did.
I'm not sure if he did or not, but regardless, the guy has played so many different positions. You know, he played short, he played left. I believe he played some third. I know he played first.
Because he sucks defensively.
Yeah, he's and look, he can do something at least in left field. We saw a little bit of that at the tail end of last year when he came up. So we'll just have to see. I mean, I think for right now, you want him in that DH role as much as you can have, or maybe playing a little bit of first base when Mancini needs a day off of his feet at first, and you just let the kid hit. I mean, you know, today, 0 for 4 with a strikeout, you'd like to see him, you know, again, all the caveats of small sample size, but you'd like to see him with that bat that everyone is hoping for and expecting. You'd like to see that take off.
Of course. Tommy's saying hi from Melbourne, Australia. I don't know what time it is there, but I don't know if you had to stay up super late or get up really early to watch the Orioles, but thanks for joining us. And then Joe on Twitter is pointing out about how Hyde, and the announcers love to say this, point out that Ruiz played quarterback in high school, which I think doesn't correlate to baseball, except to say, like anything, all these baseball players were the best athletes at their high school.
A lot of them probably played.
They were the shortstop.
Played quarterback or running back or something. Yeah, they were all that guy. By the way, about 6:30 a.m. Sunday in Australia, so good morning.
Okay, I'm surprised you know that.
Yeah.
All right. Well, AJ must be in the Mountcastle's biggest fan because he likes his defense. But
look,
that's okay. We'll figure out what happens.
I'm not super down on Mountcastle defensively. There are better players there right now. You've got Anthony Santander in right field, who was a Gold Glove finalist last year. You've got Cedric Mullins, who can run all over the place in center field. And Austin Hayes showed in spring training the capability with his arm to throw runners out. And you know, they've played him in left these first few games. So I don't think that there's any problem with this outfield defense right now. I think the outfield, in fact, is probably one of the strengths of this team, if not the strength of this team. So I don't think you mess with it by throwing Mountcastle into that mix when you can just let Ryan Mountcastle focus on hitting the ball, which is really what he's the guy that's been in that cleanup spot the last 2 days and came up with the big hit
yesterday.
Yeah, he had the big hit yesterday on opening day. So, you know, 0-for-4 today, but you want him to get the bat heated up before you start throwing defensive responsibilities at him that are just going to complicate it, especially with such a young player. So,
all right. What I love about Birdland tonight is we're the only interactive post-game show. So whatever you're saying in those comments, you get to steer the conversation, which is why I got to bring up this comment to you, Andrew. Our catchers suck. Do you think Santander should be we should trade Santander for a catcher?
No. No.
You guys realize that our catchers are holdovers.
Well, yeah, and there's a little guy named Adley Rutschman who's going to be the catcher of this team, probably if not by next season, maybe even a little earlier. So, no reason to trade one of your better outfielders and a guy who was, through the first handful of weeks and months of the shortened season last year was probably an AL MVP candidate. Anthony Santander shouldn't go anywhere for a catcher. I'm not saying they shouldn't trade him if they can get something decent for him, but don't do it for a catcher. Trust me. And honestly, I don't have a problem with Pedro Severino as the starting catcher for this team right now. You know, could he do a little bit of a better job framing pitches and receiving? Absolutely. But, he could be a little better defensively. Don't get me wrong, but he's also a guy that can throw a few hits together in a game and contribute. This team offensively and from a lineup standpoint doesn't have a whole lot of issues for where it is in its rebuild right now.
Right.
We talked a little bit about this in one of our pregame shows or our preseason shows, excuse me. Talking about kind of what the positions are that can fill in and the big position that we thought was a major hole was second base. And all of a sudden we're seeing Rio Ruiz step up and fill in that spot. And he can do that for as long as, you know, his bat and defense will allow him to. So there are bigger problems on this team, specifically on the pitching department, than, you know, finding a new catcher or trading away outfielders when you don't particularly need to right now.
Yeah, everyone got on base today except for Trey Mancini, who got a sac fly RBI, and Ryan Mountcastle. But everyone else got on. And Mountcastle, you forgive because he had the big hit yesterday. And you got to remember that this Tanner Houck guy that started for the Red Sox, he was looking unbelievable. The fact that the Orioles were able to keep up with him and knock away enough balls to get to the bullpen was pretty impressive.
Well, and I want to talk about Houck for a second. Jim Palmer made the point on the broadcast that he looked like a – and I believe that Kevin Brown and Jeff Arnold were making the same point on the radio, or so I was told by some followers on Twitter – that he looked like the reverse of Chris Sale with his delivery and his arm slot and everything. He looked like the right-handed Chris Sale, obviously not with Chris Sale's stuff, if you will, but that sweeping slider to a right-handed hitter going away, it looked unhittable today. And through those first handful of innings, he was really, really good. The Orioles finally, you know, obviously ended up getting to him in the fourth for a couple of runs, but you know, for the Orioles to kind of hang in there. I mean, you go back to the second inning, Rio Ruiz, Austin Hayes, and Michael Franco all go down swinging in that inning. He at that point had four strikeouts across five batters. He was cruising early on. So for the Orioles to kind of stick with it and finally get to him in the fourth, you know, Ruiz drew the walk, and they were able to string some behind on that, you know, that same part of the order that had struck out two innings earlier, stuck with it, got to Tanner Houck, even though he really did, like you mentioned, looked incredible early on in this game, you know, with that sweeping slider. I can appreciate that the Orioles came back around on that second time through the order and were able to get to him.
And a really wide strike zone today, which really helps with that sweeping slider, where you were seeing that ball move 17, 18 inches across the plate.
Yeah, Ron Culpo maybe not as bad as Joe West was yesterday at home plate, right, but still a little bit of an interesting strike zone, if you will, for, you know, on the whole.
Bring me the computer umpires, yes, robot umpires. Yes,
especially if it gets Cowboy Joe West and you know those folks out of there.
At least behind the plate.
Yeah,
I'm okay with them in the field.
I'd be fine with it as well. So we'll
see. And Palmer also pointed out that Chris Sale is 180 pounds, which is not it's impossible. There's no way he's 180 pounds.
I think just his legs and arms might be 180.
I mean, he
pounds.
Is 6'6".
He's got all the lankiness to him. Yeah.
But I'm thin and lanky. He's not 180 pounds. That's like his high school, like freshman year baseball card.
Yeah, he's got a lot going on in the arms and legs department, but obviously, you know, Tanner Houck, to his credit, and he pitched well at the end of at the end of last season. It was such a short season that it only felt like the end of last season.
All we got was the middle.
Yeah, all we got was a brief portion of last season, but he pitched well last season and has turned it into, you know, like I said, early on in that match today, he looked good, you know, in the matchups with the Oriole hitters, but they were able to stick with it, like I said, and get to him in the fourth, which was important.
Yeah. Any other takeaways from this game?
No, I mean, look, 2-0 is great. Having a series victory this early in the season is great. Obviously, there's going to be the contingent of fans who are there's going to be two different contingents of fans. The fans who are way too excited about a 2-0 start on a team that's expected to lose close to, if not more than 100 games. And then there's going to be the contingent of fans who are really disappointed by a 2-0 start, who want them to lose all those games in order to better their draft spot for next season. I've seen a lot of fans getting excited, seeing the two Vanderbilt pitchers, Jack Leiter and Kumar Rocker. Just note that the Orioles are not going to get either of those guys. The draft order for the June draft has already been determined. We're talking about next year's draft order, and both those Vanderbilt pitchers are probably coming out this year. So don't worry about them being on the Orioles. It's not going to happen. I've heard a lot of fans getting excited, and that's just not the case.
Right. And don't worry. Even next year, it looks like the Red Sox are going to have a higher draft pick than us.
Well, and remember, they have a higher draft pick than us this year too, because the Orioles finished ahead of the Red Sox last season.
Correct.
And they're well on their way to doing it again this year if they keep this up.
Yeah. It's because they won't use the word rebuild in Boston.
Yeah.
All right, so tomorrow you and I are back on here for Birdland Tonight after the Oriole game. Tomorrow is another 1 o'clock start, Bruce Zimmerman versus Garrett Richards. I know everyone's excited to see Bruce Zimmerman, local kid, kind of make his debut with the Orioles.
Yeah, it should be fun, you know, and especially not only tomorrow making his debut in Boston, but obviously next weekend, you know, you presume that he'll get to make a start at Camden Yards, which is really cool as well. So exciting, and the Orioles are going for a sweep to start the season, which is, and especially against a team like the Red Sox, you always kind of like that feeling.
Yeah, you know, I'm gonna start the countdown of the all the projections that were like, you know, Rosenthal said 50 wins or whatever, so we can keep track, so when we pass those numbers we can prove these guys wrong and call them out.
Yeah, I mean, it wouldn't be the first time that anybody has predicted the Orioles to lose a ton of games, and they've, you know, they've challenged that aspect. But let's, you know, I will
that's
still say let's
the, or, right. That's as that much the Oriole way as anything Ripken has done.
Yeah, exactly. But let's still just keep it in perspective. This is two games, the smallest of small sample sizes, and but it's nice to have, you know, this start. And like I said, it just makes it sweeter that it's been in Fenway, especially in front of the return of fans who, you know, whoever that guy is that's yelling on the broadcast. I just hope he's able to get some lozenges this evening and maybe some herbal tea. And if he's going to be back at it tomorrow afternoon, we'll see. But I just hope that guy is able to get a break on his voice and a break from the alcoholic beverages or something, because he has really put in the work in these first two games.
I definitely wrote that down about the loud fans and annoying fans in Boston is in my notes. Maybe it's something we can talk about tomorrow as you and I will be back. But I wonder how much of that is Fenway versus how much we're going to hear that in Baltimore.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering how much the Orioles restricting to season ticket holders, will that keep some of the Red Sox fans out of opening day?
Well, it's interesting. The Red Sox have even fewer fans than the Orioles are going to be allowed to have at Camden Yards. They had a 4,571 there today. And the Orioles are going to be, I think, closer to what, 11 or 12,000 11,000 in the stadium next week. So it is interesting, though, when you're watching the game on television, you know, you see these pockets of fans, but you really the field mics really do pick up a lot when there's not as many, you know, you don't hear as much murmuring and conversation because there's not a larger group of fans together. You more hear singular yells and shouts and chants from different pockets, but you really do hear quite a lot. And you're also in tune picking up a lot from on the field as well. I've heard you know, and we heard a lot of this last season with no fans in the ballpark, but you're still able to hear some of the conversation going on the field from the dugout, right. You know, yells if a guy pops up and yells an expletive here or there. You're still hearing some of that stuff because there's still not enough fans in the park to really make a difference.
No, you heard of it when one of the guys got like hit with the ball or something, you heard a real good clear, like, are you okay? Umpire checking in. So nice stuff that you can pick up like that. If anyone from Masson is tuning into this, I'd ask that tomorrow on the broadcast you show us this obnoxious fan, because I think we all have a picture in our head of what this guy looks like. So just
if they can find him, yeah. I'm sure with so few fans in the park, somebody can throughout nine innings can maybe find him if he's back tomorrow.
It's Boston, so you have 6,000 fans. You got 5,000 annoying fans.
Yeah, that's a good point. It's a very good point.
Well, guys, I see a lot of great comments and all praising this show in the chat on Facebook and Twitter and Twitch. So if you can help us out, share the show, spread the word. We're going to be doing some giveaways in the next week or so as we start to try to get numbers up and get other people to understand that this is a better experience than whatever Masson's doing right now. So, guys, we'll see you tomorrow after the game. Andrew, thanks for joining me.
My pleasure. Go Birds.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.